Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, Sifu Sylvain here with you to start another Go Show. If you're not familiar and you're jumping in at this stage of these videos, because I encourage you to follow the playlists that I have set up on my videos on YouTube, or the order that they appear on Patreon, wherever I put them. But some of you, like me, will jump around, and so some of these Gosho, some of these letters, some of these teachings require kind of a database, if you will, of assumed knowledge. So they may seem a little obtuse. This is why I encourage you to go back to the beginning and try to follow them in some chronology, because they do build on one another, as does all of Buddhist teachings. And this is why Shakyamuni exhorted us to study all of Buddhist teachings, and non-Buddhist for that matter, because ultimately it's all about achieving this goal of a supremely well-lived life. Or as Western poetry would say, and I don't remember which poet it was. Sorry about that, I forgot to move the mic again. Now you can hear me. But to, what was I saying? Oh yeah, it's to suck the marrow from life. In other words, to live it fully in each and every moment. That doesn't mean you have to be running all the time. It simply means that your consciousness, your mind, needs to be focused on the best potential and your dignity and the dignity of life in general. So, on that topic, that's kind of a slide into the current Go Show. Titled On Rebuking Slander of the Law and Eradicating Sins, which I spoke about in the last video, at the end of the last video. Sins in Buddhism isn't the same thing as sins to a Catholic. Everything in Buddhism is about how you conduct your life in this and every succeeding moment. So sins are about doing things that impede your dignity and the dignity around you. This is all of Buddhism. Buddhism is about how you live the life in this moment, the life that you have. Now, Nichiren is quite a scholar, so as a result, a lot of what he says to his disciples, his followers, his inner circle, his students, relies heavily on what he's read, which goes back to the days of Shakyamuni, almost 3,000 years ago. So it may seem like Nichiren is doing the same thing that has been done for thousands of years, is using these great fables and similes and analogies to describe something that is much easier to understand in modern terms to the people he's talking to in the 13th century. And this is why I'm doing what I'm doing today, is trying to interpret all of this stuff in a way that's far more accessible to people of my day and time, right? To us. And so why doesn't Nichiren do that? Well, he does to an extent, but Nichiren lives in a time where he's dealing with the distorted scholarship, if you will, of many other groups that he's demonstrating are misled and incorrect, erroneous at times, and inventive of their own, and with their own agendas, therefore, using Buddhism as an all-encompassing term to help advance their agendas. And that's absolutely what Nichiren would say is slanderous. All of Buddhism would say is slanderous, incorrect, misleading, a deep sin. right? Because you're taking away the not only the dignity of living a life well, but the possibility of living the life well, because you're training people to think incorrectly about Buddhism. So again, in Western terms, words like evil come up. But I caution you, do not look at these terms from a religious point of view. Everything in Buddhism is about our self-development. Starts within you. All right? Nowhere else. No other being, no other. So, enough said on that. As we get into this Gosho, you'll find that he uses a tremendous amount of quotations and concepts from earlier Buddhism, which were used to help direct people's thinking to this, not only the severity of their actions, and the consequences of their actions, but the difficulty in overcoming those consequences, not outside themselves. Again, everything's internal. This is all about perception, our mental perception, and the blinders that we put on, the misinterpretations that we inculcate into all our thinking. Some are minor and they take very little effort to overcome, and you just change your mind. Others, even though you work to change your mind, still persist in some form and they color your thinking improperly. So when we talk about kalpas of time to expiate sins in that kind of rhetoric, remembering that this is all Western translation and was probably absolutely not said this way by Nichiren, but the translations using Western thinking use these concepts. So please translate them for yourselves into concepts of self-admonishment, self-training, self-opportunity. This is all about your construct of you and the world around you. So Buddhism isn't about some lofty place. That Buddha land is your mental construct, your worldview. Okay, so and that's yours. That's not somebody else's. You may adopt somebody else's, but then it's yours. So when you hear words like Buddha land, think my world vision, my concept of the world, because that is you and your environment, which are one. Okay, so enough of that. Let's just jump right in, and I think you'll see what I mean. I'll probably remind you because it's easy to get taken away in the storytelling here. So Nichiren begins, and Nichiren, to the point, Nichiren is writing this to one of his most staunch students and followers, Shijo Kingo, a samurai who is in a position of great power, and works with I don't remember how many samurai he controls, but he's a head honcho. And all of the samurai are there to exercise the law as they see fit and murder people daily in service to their landlord, right? So he's in a position to really be conflicted about philosophically what his life is for, what it ultimately means, how much of it is service and duty to his lord versus the karma he's creating for himself and others, right? So it's a very difficult time. It's very authoritarian. And he has been a staunch follower of Nichiren. As you may or may not know, all samurai have a code that they follow, and at some point when they can no longer be of service to their lord, in other words, when they're to stop being good at guarding and killing, they retire and go off into the wilderness to live in a cave and self-subsist in search of what they call Satori, an earlier form or thinking, if you will, of some sort of enlightenment. And it turns into quite an analogy of trying to expiate themselves from all of the death that they've caused, right? Sort of cleanse themselves of that and reach something of a higher goal. It's an honorable thought, but it's hard to wash away all of that death or commitment even to the death, even if you didn't kill a single person. So, though he's a staunch follower and his wife becomes a follower as well, his wife worries a great deal as to whether or not the path that he and they have chosen to follow Nichiren's doctrine might not be a less than a good idea. And their doubts, especially her in this case, is because they are seeing Nichiren go through exiles, punishments, almost beheaded. They're starting to wonder, geez, you know, if Nichiren's going through this, then, you know, number one, why are we following him? And secondly, how does that speak to our own practice? So, right, me. I mean, Shijo Kingo is worried about this, but he's written a letter to Nichiren expressing that his wife, he's having a hard time convincing his wife, in other words, because she's really fearing for their lives, right? So, that's the context of this letter. So I think that also is a critical piece of information that might help you understand. So let's get into it again. Nichiren writes, I have read your letter carefully. In the past as well, when I was exiled to the province of Izu on account of the Lotus Sutra, I rejoiced in my heart, though when I say so, I suppose people will think that I am speaking immodestly. So I've said that before. Sometimes when you read this, I, Nichiren, this sounds a little bit boastful, but that's not how it's meant. So right now, right at the beginning, first paragraph of the letter, he goes, I'm sure, you know, some people think I'm a little full of myself. But now he's going to explain, it's not that he's full of himself. He's going to explain better than me. He goes on, if, since the beginningless past, I have ever incurred blame for the sake of the Lotus Sutra, whether I was sincerely devoted to it or not, would I then have been born in this lifetime as a mere ordinary mortal? Therefore, when I was condemned to exile, though I felt downcast for a while, seeing that it was for the sake of the Lotus Sutra, I was also delighted. For I thought that I might thereby eradicate to some small extent the offenses of my previous existences. And you've heard me talk about existences, previous and future and current, as moment to moment. We live moment to moment. However, he goes on, the various grave sins of the 10 evil acts, the 4 major offenses, the 6 major offenses, the 8 major offenses, the 10 major offenses, the 5 sins that condemn one to the hell of incessant suffering, the slander of the correct teaching, and the sin of incorrigible disbelief accumulated since the beginningless past must stand taller than a huge mountain, run deeper than the great sea. So what he's saying there, first of all, right now you have like, what, 10 terms to go and look up if you're interested in dissecting all of these references. But basically what Nichiren is saying is I've screwed up in my early life, in my childhood, in my early studies, so much that, my goodness, all of these, what shall I call them, indiscretions, these fallacies that I've held, we all do it, right? When I was a teenager, I thought, oh my gosh, how could I think that? That was so wrong, right? So here is recounting in terms of Buddhism, you know, with all of the mistakes that I've made in my life, if you piled them all up, it'd be a huge mountain, right? So again, this is, it's flowery talk, but you get the example, right? So then he moves on. When it comes to the 5 cardinal sins, the commission of even one of them will condemn one to the hell of incessant suffering for the space of an entire kalpa. Okay, so now we're going to start talking about these wonderfully colorful, poetic definitions of Buddhism that come from, you know, 2800 years ago. A kalpa is the length of time it takes for the lifespan of human beings to decrease from 80,000 years to 10 years, decreasing at the rate of 1 year every 100 years, and then to increase again to 80,000 years at the same rate. One who murders one's parents will fall into the hell of incessant suffering and undergo its terrible pain without a moment's respite for such a period of time. So you see, this again, this is, all these colorful terms aren't about actual years. They're about the depth of suffering that one will feel in their lifetime having committed one of these indignities, counter to life, unlife-affirming causes, actions. The effects are this profound. Follow? Continuing. As for the person who slanders the Lotus Sutra, though he may not be serious at heart, if he so much as manifests the outward appearance of animosity, disparages the sutra even in jest, or makes slight, not of the sutra itself, but of those who act in its names, then the sutra says he will fall into the hell of incessant suffering for countless kalpas of the kind described above. So this is to speak ill of another upholder of Myoho Rengekyo, just to have bad thoughts about another practitioner of Myoho Rengekyo has greater consequence to your enlightenment, or to the enlightenment of this person. Sorry, I didn't mean to accuse you. is thousands times more grave than killing your own parents. So how grave is that, right? The people who cursed and struck Bodhisattva never disparaging at first behaved with such animosity. But later they took resolute mind and conviction in him and became his followers. What happens then? Looking up to him and treating him with great respect, honoring him as the heavenly deities would the Lord Chakra, and standing in awe of him as we do the sun and moon. Despite this, the great offense of their initial slander was difficult to extinguish. So they were condemned to the great hell of Avicii hell for 1,000 kalpas and abandoned by the three treasures for 200 million kalpas. So, the word forgiven isn't used here. Nothing is ever forgiven because it's real, it's there. So, in Buddhist thought, forgiving is, that's a strange human bromide we give to try to forget things. Buddhism is more constructive than that. What Buddhism says is you can expiate that thing that you did by countermanding it with acts that heal that rift. But healing that rift acknowledges, one, that it is still a rift. So it takes a long time to heal that rift. Just like if somebody breaks your trust, and it depends on how deeply they betray your trust, you may never feel that you can trust that person completely ever again. Or you may find that you understand their level of betrayal as maybe part of their ignorance about something, and that their behavior since then has demonstrated to you not only their contrition, because it's not about that, it's that they've actually changed their perspective and the way that they understand their own behavior toward not just you, but everything around themselves, that they have profoundly altered whatever motivates their actions of betrayal, then you're more likely to start trusting that person. But ask yourself, how long does it take to reestablish full trust? So that's what this example is about. When you create anti or non-life affirming acts to whatever degree, then the path back to dignity will be greater or lesser, but always there, right? There's no extinguishing completely without a time component, depending on the degree of the offense, right? So, moving on. If one were to liken the retribution for the five cardinal sins and slander of the law to illness, then the five cardinal sins would be comparable to a sunstroke, the effects of which appear suddenly. Slander of the law, on the other hand, is like white leprosy, which seems minor at first, but bit by bit becomes very serious indeed. Those who commit slander of the law are in most cases reborn in the hell of incessant suffering, or in a few cases, in one of the six lower paths. If they are reborn in the realm of human beings, then the sutra tells us they will suffer from poverty, low status, white leprosy, and so forth. So I know I'm living in the south of the United States right now. And I know a lot of people would hear that, suffer from poverty, would then say, what are you saying? It's my fault that I'm poor? Well, in a consciousness sense, yeah. But that doesn't mean you should take up arms and fight that. You're fighting the wrong enemy. Being in poverty isn't something that's put upon you, in other words. It comes from your life. You know, this is where people don't understand karma. The way we're born and the socioeconomical systems that we are in, either moving into or moving out of, is entirely due to the atomical energies that construct us. So we are what we are, but that doesn't mean that our emotions and feelings and thoughts are any different from a billionaire. Our Buddhahood is the same. It is our circumstance that's different. And it is our tendencies and conditions that put us there. So as Nietzsche is teaching here, it's not the fact that you're in poverty that you need to lament. In fact, you can look at it as an opportunity, because it means that those obstacles that keep you from your happiness are really obvious and tangible. Think about it that way. If you were a millionaire, let's not say billionaire, let's make it somewhat realistic. Let's say one day you win millions of dollars in a lottery, or you work really hard and you achieve a way of earning a tremendous, let's just call it financial security, okay? Because that's different for everyone. It's a more realistic conversation. If you are very secure in your liveliness, your human liveliness, you don't have to worry about eating or shelter or protection or any of those things, then achieving enlightenment might seem almost impossible, because it would be very difficult for you to name or elicit or point to those things in your life that keep you from it. And you might become a person of incorrigible disbelief. I'm already enlightened. Look at my life. I don't need to practice. I don't need to do that. Yikes. But if you're poor, if you're experiencing poverty, you can write pages of lists of things that are keeping you down. What Buddhism says is all those things that you think are keeping you down are coming through your life. So you then can change those things one by one. Tick them off. Some might be really hard to tick off. Others may just take a little bit of conviction in your mind. But one by one, you can tick them off and your life can get better and better. Your life condition will improve. It's not tied to your socioeconomical reality. It may seem so. So that's the point of all of this. Let me go on. When I hold up the bright mirror of the Lotus Sutra before me, all is crystal clear. There can be no doubt that in my previous existences, I was guilty of slandering the law. If in my present existence, I do not wipe out that offense, then in the future, how can I escape the pains of hell? So, same example. If I don't address the things that I think are making me, that I'm suffering, if I don't address them, then how can I ever get out of this situation? How could I gather together all the grave offenses that I have accumulated in age after age since the far distant past and eradicate them all in my present lifetime so that I may be spared the great pain in the future? When I ponder this question, it occurred to me that now, in the present age, slanderers of the law fill every province of the nation. It's all around me, right? What is more, the ruler of the nation himself, the foremost perpetrator of such slander. If in such a time I do not expunge these heavy sins, then at what time can I expect to do so? Now, if I, Nichiren, insignificant person that I am, were to go here and there throughout the country of Japan denouncing these slanders, then innumerable persons among the four categories of Buddhists who follow erroneous doctrines would be in one instant join their innumerable voices in reviling me, because I'd be showing them the error of their ways. At that time, the ruler of the nation, allying himself with those monks who slander the law, would come to hate me and try to have me beheaded or order me into exile. And if this sort of thing were to occur again and again, then the grave offenses that I have accumulated over countless kalpas would be wiped out within the space of a single lifetime. There's the way out. Such then was the great plan that I conceived, and it is now proceeding without the slightest deviation. So when I find myself thus sentenced to exile, I can only feel that my wishes are being fulfilled. So there's two things happening here as Nichiren is writing. He's saying, okay, let's allay your worries and doubts and your wives that it's maybe inappropriate or self-defeating to follow Nichiren. Let me let you know that all of these persecutions and things that I'm experiencing, I'm speaking for Nichiren right now, I fully expected, because what I'm doing is I'm practicing vehemently with tremendous determination, and I'm pointing out to those in my environment who are opposing me, teachers of other sects they call Buddhism but are not. They're provisional and they're adding their own agendas and so forth and so on to them, that they're not practicing correctly. Then I'm asking for trouble, but I'm asking for trouble for the sake of the correct teaching. That's the key thing. And by doing so, I know I'm going to incur the wrath of these people, but I'm doing so because not only do I want to attain enlightenment, my goal, but I want to do so through expiating whatever, whether I knew it or not, whatever things I did to get in my own way of Myoho Renge Kyo, whatever I did that was not fully dignified in the terms of life in general, let alone my own, impeding me from my enlightenment. I want to expiate those things completely. And it may mean that, you know, it's like disinfectant. I've opened a sore in my arm, and in order to heal it properly, I need to kill the germs that are in it. And then I could start putting salve on it and healing it properly. And I may always have a scar from it, but it won't impede me from attaining my ultimate goal. So that Shijo Kingo and his wife can feel more secure in that they're following the correct teachings of Myoho Renge Kyo through Nichiren's doctrine, and that Nichiren's exiles and punishments and so forth are simply the nature of his fight against his previous offenses. It takes a lot of courage to be happy, I've heard it said. So this is Nichiren's story. So he's letting them know, don't be dissuaded by the suffering that I'm incurring because I planned for it. Understand this is how the law works. And now you can also see he's also extending his own life experience and assuaging their doubts by giving them tools to say when they're feeling doubts and obstacles. That overcoming those obstacles is exactly the way to alter one's life condition and get closer and closer to the ultimate dignity of Buddha-ness. They're developing, in other words, their Buddha wisdom. So the lesson is twofold here, right? Or what, however many folds you want to give it. All right, moving on. Where are we time-wise? Okay, got a little time. Nevertheless, he continues, being no more than an ordinary person, I have at times been apt to regret having taken such a course. What a wonderful thing for Nichiren to say. I mean, he's their ultimate teacher, right? And first of all, he says, look, I'm just a guy like you. And secondly, he says, don't think I haven't had my doubts. Wow. So, to anyone out there who's practiced any length of time and felt like, ugh, I need a break from this, I don't need to do this, or worse, there are all kinds of terms for it. But yeah, it's hard. It's a hard practice, not because doing it is hard, but because staying in it is hard. Staying in that mind, it's difficult. It's not what we're accustomed to in this samsaric form. We're accustomed to hanging on to things, categorizing things, judging things, and manipulating things, and finding ways around things, right? We're devious little creatures. So it's appropriate to feel guilt about doing that, but don't let it overwhelm you. Just start again. Moving on. And if even I am troubled by such feelings, then how much more so in the case of a woman such as your wife, who is unaware of all the circumstances surrounding the matter? Persons like you and her do not have full knowledge of the Buddhist teachings, and it pains me to think how greatly you must regret that you ever chose to follow Nichiren. Talks about himself in the third person here, but he's just trying to reach out to their mindset, right? And yet, contrary to what might be expected, I hear that you too are even firmer and more dedicated in your resolute mind and conviction than I myself. High praise. Which is indeed no ordinary matter. I wonder if Shakyamuni Buddha himself may have entered your hearts, and it moves me so that I can barely restrain my tears. This is Nichiren at his most compassionate, right? You can tell that he and Shijo Kingo and his family have a very, very strong, empathetic relationship. He's telling them, look, I hear that you're resolute, your resolve to Myoho Renge Kyo is even greater than mine. That moves me to tears. Then he says, the great teacher Miao Lo says in his commentary, the annotations on the words and phrases of the Lotus Sutra, Volume 7, quote, therefore we know it is because of seeds planted in previous existences, end quote, that in the latter age one is able to hear the law even for an instant, and having read it, heard it, take resolute mind and conviction in it. He also says, the annotations on Great Concentration and Insight, Volume 2, quote, having been born at the end of the middle day of the law, I have been able to behold these true words of the sutra. Unless one has planted the wonderful and difficult to understand cause in a previous existence, they are truly difficult to encounter now, end quote. During his first 40 and more years of teaching, Shakyamuni Buddha kept secret the five characters of Myoho Renge Kyo. Not only that, he still remained silent concerning them when he preached the first 14 chapters of the Lotus Sutra, which comprised the theoretical teaching. It was only with the lifespan chapter that he spoke openly regarding the two characters of Renge, which represent the five characters of Myoho Renge Kyo, and indicate the true effect and the true cause. The Buddha did not entrust these five characters to Manjushri, Universal Worthy, Maitreya, Medicine King, or the others of their group. Instead, he summoned forth the Bodhisattva's superior practices, boundless practices, pure practices, and firmly established practices, and their followers from the great earth of tranquil light, and transferred the five characters to them. So again, that's the latter day of the law. That's when people are expected to have the capacity to get this simple methodology of instantiating, invoking enlightenment. Just like that. Hanging on to it is another matter, but invoking it, it happens instantly. Can be forgotten instantly as well. That's why it takes a lot of practice to hang on to it. What took place then was no ordinary ceremony, the ceremony in the sky, the story of the Lotus Sutra. The Thus Come One Many Treasures, who lives in the world of treasure purity, made his appearance, seated in a tower that emerged from the earth, and was adorned with seven kinds of treasures. Shakyamuni purified 410,000 million Nayutas of worlds in addition to this major world system, planted them with rows of jeweled trees measuring 500 yojanas high, in intervals of an arrow shot length, placed a lion seat 5 yojana in in height beneath each jewel tree, and seated on these seats all the Buddhas from the 10 directions who were his emanations. His emanations. In other words, this is another kind of a duality thing. We think of Shakyamuni as the Buddha, but in reality, Shakyamuni is the great saint of the Shakya clan who attained Buddhahood. He is not Buddha. What he attained is Buddha. And it's critical to understand that as you read through all of these things, because when he says the Buddhas from the 10 directions who are emanations from him, not Shakyamuni, but his attained Buddha-ness, shows that Buddha is not a singular thing. It's not a singular person, certainly, but it's also not a singular thing. It is a thing with countless manifestations, you and I being two of them. Thereupon the Thus Come One Shakyamuni removed his soiled robe, opened the treasure tower, and took a seat beside the Thus Come One Many Treasures. It was as though the sun and moon had appeared side by side in the blue sky, or as though the heavenly king Chakra and the king born from the crown of the head had been able to sit together in the hall of the good law. Manjushri and the other bodhisattvas of this world, and perceiver of world sounds and other bodhisattvas of the other worlds, were gathered together in open space throughout the 10 directions, like so many stars filling the sky. At this time, in this place, the great bodhisattvas such as Dharma Wisdom, Forest of Merits, Diamond Banner, and Diamond Storehouse, equal in number to the dust particles of the worlds of the 10 directions, who had gathered at the 7 places and 8 assemblies of the Flower Garland Sutra, and were disciples of Virachana Buddha, who sits on the lotus pedestal of the worlds of the 10 directions, the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas who had gathered like clouds at the great treasure chamber, when the sutras of the correct and equal period were preached, Sabuti, Chakra, and the 1,000 Buddhas who had gathered to hear the wisdom sutras, the 4 Buddhas and the 4 Bodhisattvas, including among the 9 honored ones on the right 8-petaled lotus of the Mahavarachana Sutra, the 37 honored ones of the Diamond Crown Sutra, and the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas of the realm of phenomena in the 10 directions, who are to gather in the city of Kushinagara to listen to the Nirvana Sutra, all these assembled. All these figures were recognized by Manjushri, Maitreya, and the others of their group who talked together with them, so it appeared that the great bodhisattvas such as Manjushri and Maitreya were quite accustomed to their being in attendance. It was under such circumstances that the 4 bodhisattvas emerged from the earth. So this is directly quoting the text of the Lotus Sutra, maybe not quoting, but quoting in his own way the text of the Lotus Sutra, the ceremony. So he's pointing out that with all of the consciousnesses that had ever existed, Shakyamuni Buddha was talking to all of living beings in every stage. And with all of these people there, I'm sure what he's going to tell us is that only these bodhisattvas that rose from the earth, in addition to all of these others, only those bodhisattvas of the future rising from the earth, they're coming in the future, do I bequeath the ultimate teaching. So it's a huge way of making a point, right? So anyway, let's see what he says. When Bodhisattva Manjushri, whose teachings, the Thus Come One Shakyamuni, was the 9th to inherit, and who is the mother of the Buddhas of the 3 existences, and Bodhisattva Maitreya, who will succeed Shakyamuni Buddha after his next rebirth, stood beside these 4 bodhisattvas from the earth, they seemed to be of no significance whatsoever. Ouch! They were like humble mountain folk mingling in the company of nobles and high ministers, or like apes and monkeys seating themselves beside lions. So this is the distinction of the teachings of the Lotus from all previous teachings, right? Using words from the Lotus itself. Having summoned the 4 bodhisattvas, Shakyamuni Buddha entrusted them with the 5 characters, myoho renge kyo. There it is. And this entrustment, too, was no ordinary affair. For the Buddha first manifested 10 supernatural powers. When he extended his long broad tongue upward as far as the limit of the world of form, all the other Buddhas did likewise, so that the tongues of the Buddhas extended up into the air above the 410,000 million nayutas of worlds, like 100, 1,000, 10,000, or 1,000,000 red rainbows filling the sky. Marvelous indeed was the sight. In this manner, the Buddha displayed the wonders of his 10 supernatural powers, and in what is termed the transfer of the essence of the sutra, he extracted the core of the Lotus Sutra and transferred it to the 4 bodhisattvas. He fervently enjoined them to bestow it after his passing upon all living beings of the 10 directions. After that, he again manifested yet another supernatural power and entrusted this sutra and the other sacred teachings preached during his lifetime to Manjushri and the other bodhisattvas of this and other worlds, to the people of the two vehicles, and to the heavenly and human beings, dragon deities, and others. Yeah, we're getting long here. I'm telling you, this collection of Gosho in the third volume, which I have to go and clean up, these are some profound teachings. And it's no mistake that they're being taught to very close friends, followers of Nichiren. These are profound teachings that you wouldn't just tell to the man on the street, right? These would require some commitment, some trust. So we'll continue with this. Hopefully I can maintain the energy into another video. But there's quite a lot to chew on there. So hopefully this inspires you in some way to redouble your practice. It certainly does me. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you so much for participating, supporting any way you can. Stay strong, take care of your health and your loved ones, respect your life and the dignity of life all around you. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Till next time, bye-bye.